So without any further with me, would you please welcome with a big applause, Six Pack Charlie.
I believe this one's for you. Both of them? Both of them are here.
Yeah, they can hear me anyhow.
Okay.
Hi, I am Charlie. I'm an alcoholic. Sue's doing a hell of a good job here, you know. She deserves a nice hand. Yeah, I'm a 14-carat alcoholic. And I don't know why I get invited to come to these places. I ain't got nothing special to say to you. I'm just an old drunk that hadn't had a drink for a long time, you know. And I love it. And I love it. This is my wife, Shirley. She was the reason I drank. But since she's straightened out, everything's going pretty well, you know. You know, I just love to come to these functions and just look at the people. I imagine most of us in here were drunks, you know, and to see them, the ladies all dressed and looking nice and their hair looking nice and all the guys looking good and hair combed and us guys without hair shined, you know, and but it's wonderful, you know. And it's so amazing to come from where I come from and to be doing the things that I'm doing today because of Alcoholics Anonymous and God. I'm telling you, it's something. Racine, she called me at my home last night. I'm from Erie, Pennsylvania. My home group there is the Perry Group of Alcoholics Anonymous at the Alphanon Club in Erie. And she called me last night and said, "Are you okay, Charlie?" I said, "Well, I'm talking to you on the phone." And she said, "Well, I heard you had a stroke or a heart attack." I said, "Goddamn, not yet, you know. I might have one tonight, but I did have one about, beg pardon?
Fall Alley.
Fall Alley. But I did have a stroke a year ago this month. And fortunately, it kind of left my left hand a little numb and my bottom lip a little numb. But I can still talk, you know, and... after probably $5,000 and going to these doctors and MRIs and CAT scans and all that, they told me to take an aspirin every morning. I said, "Well, thanks, you know." So that's what we do, you know. I wasn't really. I said to my wife on the way down here, I said, "Geez, Shirley, I'm not too nervous here today." That was kind of unusual. And but the closer I got to Youngstown. Things started to happen. Then when I got in this room, now I'm a goddamn wreck, you know. That's the way it's supposed to be, you know. Then Racine, they put me up at a nice motel here, and she asked me when I came in if the motel was okay. And I said, "Yeah, it was, you know, it was beautiful. It's got one of them big damn king-sized beds. And if I get the urge tonight, I don't know if I'll remember what to do by the time I get there, you know." I mean, that's a hell of a big bed, I'm going to tell you. You see, in my drinking days, you know, I used to think a nice motel was, you know, one with bugs, $2, and one without, $4, you know. That was about the best I could do, you know. You know, I feel honored. I've been asked down here the same week. President Clinton's running around, but hell, they brought me here in the limousine tonight. I think he had a walk-in tonight. You know what I mean? But it's fantastic, you know. And I can say I'm nothing special. I'm just an old drunk, you know. And Sue said that, you know, I had 24 years sobriety, and January 18th, God willing, the creek don't rise, I'll have 25. But for anybody in here that might have had a slip, I don't know if anybody's ever had one of those. I had 4 of them. Before I got here, you know, I didn't think I was an alcoholic. I'd stay sober 9 months, and then I'd go out and drink. And I'd come back to AA, and 6-7 months, boom, out again. You know, I just didn't think I was an alcoholic. And the last time, didn't leave too much doubt in my mind. But I came back to get warm, you know. I was all screwed up, and yeah, I went through like 22 jobs in 8 years, you know. And I was moving right along, you know. I got out of the service in 1956, and at that time, I was working on a job making $3 or $4 an hour, which wasn't bad at that time. And the next to the last time I come to AA, I was making $1.49 an hour, you know. I was moving right up the ladder of success, you know. I got out of the service, I brought a brand new red and white Ford Victoria. Beautiful damn car. Beautiful. The next time, the last time I came into AA, I was driving a 1941 Pontiac. Had a split windshield. I had a rubber fan for a defroster. Most people had air conditions already, you know. But I was moving right up the line, you know. Surely, you know, it's a hell of a good kid, you know. And she couldn't understand what was happening to me, why I was behaving like I was. I got out of the service and I come home and I'd say to Shirley, I was, my last 14 months in the service, I was stationed in Las Vegas, Nevada. And for a shy guy like me, holy Christ, I estimated my life at 30. I said, shit, I'll never live to be 30, the rate I'm going. You know, but Shirley and I come home and we get married. And Shirley was my high school sweetheart. And we've been married now 40 years. July 8th, was it, Shirley? You remember? Yeah. You got to remember those things, guys, or you're in deep shit, I'm going to tell you. We celebrated our 40th anniversary, and I have to tell you, the last 25 years have been really great. The first 5 or 6 years in AA, you know, I was still trying to get my feet to stay on the ground because I was still flying and lying, you know, but I just kept coming to AA. An old-timer near was passed away. His name was Ovi O'Brien. I don't know, Christ, he had almost 50 years in this program. And I said to Ovi, I said, hey, Ovi, how long are you going to keep going to these meetings? He says, Charlie, how long do you want to stay sober? And I just keep going. I go to 3-4 meetings a week, every week, and I love it. I'm sponsoring a guy that went to see a psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist said to him, AA is wonderful, but all they do is brainwash you. And if that's the case, just keep brainwashing me. You know, I mean, just keep it coming. I'm not going to tell you tonight the things that's happened to me and Shirley since we've been in this fellowship with Alcoholics Anonymous. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. And just being here is unbelievable, you know. But it's all through God in AA and trying to do what I'm asked to do. I sponsor a lot of people in AA. A lot of them are doing well, and a lot of them went back out. And I just, whatever God has them, directs me to do, I do, you know. I get teed off like anybody else about certain things that goes on and things that go on today in AA that kind of disturbs me a little bit. I'm not a big fan of rehabs, but they've helped people, you know. And but I have my way of thinking, and they have their way of thinking, you know. I have a few fellows I sponsored, stayed sober a couple of 3 years and found themselves a nice lady, got married, and they're having families, and everything is wonderful. And they decided to get into religion, into their church, which is, I think is a wonderful thing. I don't go to church, you know, and I don't say, hey, AA is my church. You know, AA is not a church, you know, but I get all I need from AA. But they go to church and get involved in a church, and for some reason or the other, they can't take one night a week or one night a month or one night a year just to come to a meeting and say thank you, people, for trying to help them. You know, but damn it, when they have a problem, they seem to find my number again, you know. But, you know, I still go along with them and try to help, you know. And I'm glad they're all doing fine, but I don't know. I'm telling you, I just love AA. I just love AA. You know, as a youngster, my father was a drinker, and he used to always say, like many of us, you want a little glass of beer. And I hated that. Jesus, tastes like hell. You know, I didn't want no part of that, you know. And I've been drinking Pepsi-Cola, believe it or not. I drink 15 of them a day. And I did that when I was a youngster. And my mother kept saying, you keep eating those candy bars and drinking that Pepsi, your face is going to be a mess with pimples. And for some reason or the other, if I get a pimple, I'd call the whole family in just for one. Look what I got, because it never happened, you know. But I was a jolly kid, and I liked life, and I was a fairly good athlete, and I started playing on a football team when I was 14, 15 years old, and the next thing you know, I got invited to go to the New York State Line. I live in Erie, Pennsylvania, which is 13 miles from the New York State Line. And I got invited with the older guys to go to New York State and drink beer. And I didn't like beer, but it was just a thing for me to sneak behind my parents' back and go to New York State. And went over there and found out I could get served there. And the next thing you know, I was going over there 2-3 nights a week. You can see how I was starting to lag in football practice. I was just too damn tired anymore, you know. But I didn't realize what alcohol could do to you. I think probably I was an alcoholic from the very first drink because it drove me nuts, you know. And I come home from New York State after having 10 or 15 beers. And that don't sound like many. At the end of my drinking, the last couple of days I was one of the drunk. I probably drank 100 beers, you know. And for people who are not in AA, would probably say, oh, nobody could drink 100 beers. Somehow or the other, we can drink them, you know. But so I'd come home, a youngster, 15 years old, and I'd get in the bed, and the bed starts spinning around, and I'd start seeing sparks in the air. I was, holy Christ. Well, at that time, you know, I didn't want to, you know, make too much noise puking because my parents would jump out of bed and beat hell out of me, you know. So at that time, us guys all wore Argyle socks. Now, we're talking a few years back, you know. So I'd puke in those Argyle socks, and I'd throw them out the window, and the next morning I'd get up and I'd go out and burn them, you know. And that seemed to be working fairly well. But my mother and father both worked, and we had a laundryman who come picked up the laundry and brought it back every Friday. His name was Elfie. And he'd come back on Fridays, and my mother's a redhead with a temper to go with it. And she'd get all over that poor Elfie. Where the hell's this kid's socks? You know, you're missing 3-4 socks, you know. And poor old Elfie, she says, I don't know where it is. That's all that was there. I was burning them, you know. But that's the way my career got started. Then I started dating Shirley, and we used to go out and have a hell of a lot of fun drinking and dancing and having a good time, and didn't seem to be any problems. And at that time, Shirley, the more they could feed the beer to me, and if I'd fall off her stool or something, they'd all clap, and they all thought that was great. But when I come into AA, she wasn't doing any clapping, you know. In fact, Shirley is probably one of the first ladies in Erie to have an afro. I mean, she was always going around pulling out her goddamn hair, wondering where I was, you know. Her favorite saying was, spring is here, the grass is riz, I wonder where the hell Charlie is, you know. And half the time, I wonder where the hell Charlie was, you know. But I just continued to drink. I drank all through the service, drink, 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 drink. I was over in Korea, and all I did was drink, 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 and come back out of there and drink, 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 you know. And I don't know if I said this before, but Jesus Christ, I was going through jobs left and right just because of my drinking. I used to love it when the company, after I'd be gone for 2 or 3 days, the company would call me in. They'd have the union people there and the company representatives there and the nurses there. And they'd give Charlie a lecture. They'd say, Charlie, you're such a good worker and such a nice guy. If only you didn't drink. And when it's done, I'd say thank you and I'd leave. I'd quit, you know, but I'd let them get their say in, you know. But that was a problem for me. Alcohol was a problem. I used to go to work. You know, I worked in an office, and I went to work. And on a Monday, I'd have a fresh suit on and a white shirt and a tie, you know. And for me, I looked nice, you know. But then I'd come to work Tuesday, you know, and there'd be bloodshot eyes, blood dripping down on my shirt almost from my bloodshot eyes. And there was an old guy there. His name was Patty Lynch. And at that time, he had, I think it was 18 years in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he was also my bank, see. I'd always have to borrow $5 or $10 from Patty every week. And he got paid first. He got paid before the bills, before Shirley, because I knew I'd need Patty the following week, you know. And it was just, you know, just like, you know, punching a clock, go in and say, Patty, I need 10 till payday, you know. And one day he came in the office and he said, Charlie, I wonder if I could talk to you. And I said, yes, sir, you can. You know, what the hell, he's my bank. And he sat down and he told me about a fellowship called Alcoholics Anonymous. And he told me a story of his life, how he ended up in Chicago in Skid Row, lost everything he ever had, his family, jobs, everything he ever had. And Patty had a bad set of false teeth. Jesus, you could hear him clicking for 2 blocks away, you know. And he's sitting in there clicking away, and I'm listening, you know. And I kind of got a chuckle out of that. I think I was probably 26 years old or something like that, you know. And I said, "Well, Patty, it sounds like you did need something like that, Alcoholics Anonymous, to help you out." And he said, "Well, I just wanted to let you know, Charlie." You know what Patty did? Patty planted the seed of Alcoholics Anonymous. He had planted the seed of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I don't run around here pulling people off of bar stools and telling them they better go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And Patty didn't either. But it was an opportunity for him to talk to me as a young person and maybe be of some help to me. And what he did was planted the seed of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went home that night because I was in a doghouse a lot, you know. Shirley, she found out at a young in our marriage that I wouldn't hit her. You know, my dad, you know, he told me when I was a youngster, he says, you know, Charlie, he says, well, he called me Sonny. You know, he says, Sonny, he says, it don't take much of a man to beat up a woman. So you don't hit your wife. And I said, yeah, yeah. But many a times I like to give Shirley the old Jackie Gleason right to the moon. You know what I mean? Whoa. But see, she got very bold then. And actually, I didn't lose my hair. She knocked it off. That's what happened to it. I'd come home, and I'd be gone for a day or two or three, and I'd come in the house with a smile, you know, and she would start, you know, and, you know, she'd smack me in the head a few times, you know. Then I'd go to bed, and she had those high-heeled spikes that the gals used to wear. Jesus Christ, she'd play a tune, and as soon as I'd go to sleep, she'd start pounding on my head with them goddamn spikes, you know. And that'll get your attention. That'll get your attention, you know. So that's really what happened to my hair, you know. But, you know, here was a girl that, you know, in our yearbooks in Erie, Pennsylvania, you know, show your picture, and underneath your picture would kind of give a little description of what you might want to do when you graduate from high school. And Shirley's, under her picture, it said a housewife and a mother. That's what Shirley wanted to be. You know, and that's a hell of a job when we think about it. You know, that's a hell of a job. A housewife and a mother. That's what she wanted to be. And under my picture, there was no picture. And said, often heard but seldom seen. That was under my picture, you know. Because after football season, you didn't see me much after that, you know. But Shirley, well, I was afraid this might happen to me when I get down here, that I might start lapsing someplace along the line, but I'll get through this in a second now. But anyhow, I went on drinking, and so like I say, went through many, many jobs, and Shirley and I just had all kind of domestic problems. Drinking, I was drinking all the time. You know, when I'd come home to service, I'd say, on a Wednesday, let's go out and have a beer, Shirley. She said, ain't Saturday. I said, what the hell do you mean it ain't Saturday? You only drink on Saturday. You go to a club, and you drink, and you dance, and you go home. I go, well, you stop and have breakfast, and you go home. That's a long time between drinks, boy, I tell you. So I started lying, and to me, lying, you know, goes right along with the disease of alcoholism, you know. I lied so damn much I didn't know when I was telling the truth anymore, you know. I just lie, call her from work, you know, and tell her I had to do this or I had to do that, and go out and get drunk. You know, I got so damn good at this. At one plant I worked at in Erie, we had this small child, you know, and I called the telephone company, and I asked him if there was some way that I could tone the bell down on the phone, because when the phone would ring, it'd wake up the baby. And they said, sure. And they gave me a number, and I believe to this day it was 1155, eh? She's shaking her head. So all she does her whole life, she shakes her head. But anyhow, so I dial this number, you know, and I hang up the phone, the damn phone would ring. And I'd pick it up, and, you know, I'm talking to nobody. So I'd try to be staying home for a couple of days without drinking, and my feet would get itchy, and I was starting to sweat a little bit, you know. And I'd go out to the kitchen, and I'd dial that number, and the damn phone would ring, and I'd pick up the phone, and I'd start arguing on the phone to supposing my employer at Hammermill Paper Company at that time that I had to come to work. And why the hell couldn't they find somebody else to come to work? And Shirley would go up and pack my lunch, you know, get me clean clothes. I'd get in the car, go down the street, throw the lunch away, and go out and get drunk. You know, I did that time after time after time, and I loved it. When my in-laws come and my relatives on Shirley's side, you know, they thought one drink a night was plenty, you know. I didn't quite go along with that. But while they're all in there talking and having a nice time, I was out on the telephone waiting to go to work, you know. And sure as hell, I'd call myself to work. And my father-in-law worked at the same plant I did, for Christ's sakes, you know. Oh, my Tanya, I can't believe the things I'd go through. Jesus Christ, Shirley, that girl, you know, she could have shot me dead on the spot, and I'm sure they would have decorated her with a medal in Erie, because, you know, in the height of my drinking, I'd be out drinking. I was born and raised in a little place called Lawrence Park in Erie, you know, and I was really famous down there. You know, everybody, I was famous. I was so damn famous, nobody knew who I was, you know. But Shirley, imagine this. Now, this is a lot of years ago. She would walk from Erie, Pennsylvania, to Lawrence Park, which would be about 5 miles. She'd walk down there 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, snow up to her butt, looking for me, trying to save another job. I'd drive by and toot the horn and keep going. There's a hell of a nice guy. Everybody wants a guy like that. You know what I mean? I'll tell you, that was another problem I had with my drinking. You know, I used to think that I could fight pretty good. And the more I drank, the more I was getting the shit kicked out of me, you know? And I'm not talking about big guys. I'm talking about little guys, you know? So at that time, I decided I'd become a lover, you know? And here's a guy, been gone for 3 days, bloodshot eyes, shit in his pants, and 15 cents in his pocket, going to be a lover. No, I wasn't really. There wasn't too many people looking for me, I'm going to tell you. No, no. Diarrhea became a big, big problem for me. I switched from beer to drinking vodka and orange juice. And I seemed to be able to handle that better. And that orange juice, you know, could give you a lot of trouble. Wasn't as much the vodka, but that orange juice, Jesus Christ. I mean, that diarrhea would run right down to my socks. I mean, oh. It was no longer any fun, you know. I'd be sitting in the bar and raise my hand and shit my pants. I mean, that's... And, you know, it's not bad if you go home in the same day. But, Jesus Christ, 3 days later, and, you know, I used to think I was a pretty well dresser, you know. And my shoes were always shined, but they get kind of caked after a while, you know what I mean? Then Shirley, she didn't know what the hell was going on anymore. Her and my mother, I used to call them Axis Sally. She was that lady many, you know, way back, used to run in the bars with an axe and chop up the bars, you know, come kind of the booze. Well, I call that my wife, Shirley, and my mother. And they'd come and corral me in a bar, and they'd feel proud as hell. Oh, geez, they'd tip tables over and everything. They were bad, I'm going to tell you. You can see why I drank. I mean, geez, I was embarrassed, you know. I was embarrassed. So they corralled me in this one bar, you know. And they get me in the car, you know, because I was always a jolly guy. I was not a mean guy. Well, once in a while. But they got me in a car, and we drove into my mother's house. And, oh, they're proud as a peacock, you know. They got Charlie, you know. Hell, I got that car. I don't know how I threw that backyard. There had to be a hedge out there 6 feet high. I went sailing over that hedge, and a guy was cutting his grass. And he just kind of looked, you know. He said, I wonder where the hell that guy's coming from, you know. So that was another couple of days, you know. Go get oil for a car a couple of days. Well, in fact, I didn't change oil in the car. What the hell? I mean, $3 for an oil change, it didn't. What the hell? What the hell? 30 draft beers or something, you know. But that's, and I was a hog drinker. I just drink, you know. And when it, with me, you know, when a glass got down halfway, I ordered another one. You know, I ordered another one. I mean, a guy said, Charlie, why don't you try drinking a beer one every half hour? He said, that'll help you. I said, Jesus, that might be something, you know. Now, Alfie's going to try to do any goddamn thing, you know. So I said, give me a beer. Now I'm going to drink one every half hour. 2 minutes after that, I'm done. I'm waiting for the half hour to end. Oh, man, that's murder, man. I'm going to tell you, that is murder. Oh, Jesus. It was terrible, you know. But, yeah, we went on, and we have an orphanage in Erie. We did have. It was called St. Joe's Orphanage. And every Christmas and Thanksgiving, Shirley and I, we had no children, and we dearly loved children, you know. And every year we'd go out to St. Joe's home and bring home a couple of children. You know, we'd buy them some gifts and a coat or something, you know. And then I'd go into bars and I'd cry. I said, you know, that's why I drink. I have no kids, and, you know, and that's why I drink the way I drink, you know. And they'd buy me a few beers and they said, Charlie, we heard that shit last year. You know, same thing. And how true that was. You know, it's just, I was an alcoholic and I didn't think I was an alcoholic. And if I had children, and now I have a child. I had one finally after Okay, hon. After I come into AA, about the second time, we had a little boy, and he had only seen me drink, I think he was 3 years old when I quit drinking, am I right? Yeah, I was 3 years old when I quit drinking. Now, Scott, he's 27 years old today.
28.
Doesn't matter. He's 28 years old.
29
or 30. Okay, and he's about 6'4", you know, a couple hundred pounds. Kid makes me, you know, he drives me nuts. And we have these functions that we have, you know, and there's alcohol there. And Scott will have one beer. Then he'll have coffee or pop. I said, what the hell are you drinking that one beer for? I wouldn't stop a car for one beer. He said, that's all I want, Dad. And I'll tell you what I think happened to this kid. I used to have a special chair in my house after I got sober. And we call it the hot seat. And we'd bring these people up there, you know, wanted a little help. And I'd put them in the old hot seat. And Scott would be around as a youngster, you know. And I really think that some of the AA people that would be there and how we were talking to these people about alcohol and what it had done to them and their lives, I really think a lot of that really sunk into Scott. Because, you know, at this point, he makes me sick when he drinks. I wish the hell he wouldn't even have a drink, you know. But so out of Scott, you know, he got married, and now we have three lovely grandchildren that drive me nuts, and he's doing fine, you know. And I do. He's gone to AA meetings. He won't come and listen to his old man give a lead. This is something he just doesn't want to do. And if he don't want to be there, we went to Kansas City, Missouri one time to lead an AA meeting, and Scott came with us, you know, and he wouldn't come into the meeting. He sat out in the hall. He just didn't. He doesn't feel comfortable with it. So hey, you don't force him to do those things. What the hell? He's not the alky. I am, you know. But he did have a hell of a good time. We got in Chicago, and there was a line of telephones. I'd say there was 50 telephones, pay phones, and he went around. How old was he, Shirley? 14. And he just kept, you know, putting a finger in the old slot. Guys, he came out with $8-$10. That kid was lucky, I'm going to tell you. I can remember being in a bar one time. I had a dime. I had one lousy dime. And a beer was 15 cents. Do you think I could bum a nickel? Jesus Christ, I couldn't bum a nickel. People got to know me. You know what I mean? I couldn't bum a nickel. So I took that dime, and I went in, and they had a payphone in the back. And I went in there, and I said, I know one guy I could call that he might lend me a couple of bucks, you know, so I could get openers. And I put the damn dime in, and it was busy, and I hung it up, and about 40 dimes come out of that thing. I said, holy Jesus, an alcoholic's dream. So I put another dime in there, and ping, I hung it up again, and goddamn dimes are coming out of the beat hell, you know. So I gathered them all up. And I was rich now. Man, I was rich as hell. I could just, oh, Jesus, everything was going to be great. And I got the hell out of there because I was afraid the telephone company was going to come after me, you know. But, you know, these incidents just kept happening and kept happening, you know. I would pray to God only to get me a job, to get me out of jail. And that's the way, that was my relationship with God. Get me out of this, get me out of that, you know. Shirley and the city of Erie policemen, they were against me. You know, I'd get picked up for being drunk. And they'd call Shirley, and they'd say, Shirley, we got Chuck sitting out on the steps. Come and get him. She'd say, what the hell, I don't want him. And they'd say, well, what the hell, we don't want him either. You know, so there's poor old Charlie sitting out there on the steps. Nobody wanted me, you know. They locked me up one time in there for drunk and drinking. Threw me. I was drunk. That's all there was to it. And they threw me in the tank, you know, and they said, a few minutes went by, and I called this guy down. I said, hey, I want a blanket. It's cold in here. He said, shut up. I said, you know who the hell I am? He said, shut up. So I took a roll of toilet paper, and I wrapped myself up in toilet paper. Just like a mummy, you know, and I laid down and went right to sleep, you know. But I'm telling you, I was crazier than hell. And, you know, I'd never done any of those things since I hadn't had a drink. I don't do those things anymore. I'm in this restaurant and they had those porcelain cups. Now, you youngsters got to, you know, you got to realize this was years ago, you know. I broke this cup. And this waitress says to me, that'll be a dollar. I says, for what? She says, for that cup. I says, get the hell out of here. She says, I'm going to call the cops. I said, don't bother. And I picked that all up in a napkin, and I drove up to the police station. And I laid it on a desk, and I said, how much do you think this cup's worth? And the cop says, about 50 cents. I said, there. He said, how'd you get here? I said, I drove. He says, good. Down the aisle I went. Down the aisle I went. You think drinking's an easy job? Bullshit. But I'm going to tell you, it's work. Whew. Jeez, no wonder I was so tired all the time. I prayed to God one night. About 15 of the guys, us guys, took a test to be a milk salesman for this milk company in Erie, Sterling Milk. And I did the worst on the aptitude test anybody ever took the test. But I did the highest sales ability. That's why I'm a salesman today, I guess. So they hired me to be a milkman. And I used to have to go to work at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I was supposed to be in the dairy the next morning at 10. That's when my route was done. And I had a territory that we called Russian Town in Erie. They were all Russian people. And at Christmas time, when those people invite you in for a drink, and if you'd say no, they'd be very upset. And they'd buy a hell of a lot of milk. So I'd start, you know, about 8 o'clock in the morning, get invited. And I'd get back to dairy maybe 10 o'clock at night, you know. And I'd have the front end of that milk truck just loaded with six-packs. That's where I got the name Six-Pack Charlie. Jesus, guys, I had six-packs full of that truck. And the dairy, they'd just, when I'd come in, they'd just look at me and shake their head. You'd think they would fire me, you know, but I sold a hell of a lot of milk, you know. They didn't know what the hell to do with me, you know. And one day while I was out working, or having a little tea here or there, they blacktopped the whole driveway into the garage area. You know, Christ, it must have been a half mile long, you know. And they had one little board up there. I guess it said, stay out, you know. Yep, by the time I got there, I couldn't see the board. I couldn't read it, you know. And I drove all the way down that thing, you know. The damn thing was still wet, you know. Guys, they just shake their head. They just shake their head. Well, I'll tell you, my friends. One morning, I loaded my truck up at 3 o'clock in the morning. And a milk truck. Right behind you, they have a bar, which we called a crash bar. In case anybody ever hit the truck or anything, the milk cartons would come forward and hit that bar and stop them from hitting you. And I loaded this milk truck up, and I'm starting to head out on my route, and my good friend, the diarrhea, come along. So I went out in front of the dairy, and I just stepped out of the truck, and some lady was coming home from her bowling banquet. And she was loaded, and she had this big Bonneville. And she hit that goddamn truck so hard, she drove that crash bar right straight through the steering wheel. Right straight through the steering wheel. If I had been in that truck, I was dead. That's the only time I ever thanked God for the diarrhea, you know? thank you. Christ, there was milk out in the street, running down the street, you know, and her horn was stuck, and Christ, the people were coming around. I said, oh, Jesus. So I left that dairy. I said, the hell with you. I quit. So now I'm without another job. You know, oh boy. I could find jobs. Jesus, I could find jobs. Weren't the greatest jobs, but I could find them. So I went over to the east side of Erie, and there was a guy there. His name was Moon. He had two milk trucks. One pedaled the west side of Erie, and one pedaled the east side of Erie. And I said, Moon, I'll make you a rich man. You give me a job here, I'll make you a rich man, because I can really sell that stuff. And he bought it. He bought it. Our car was in lockup. He got that out for us. We had no food. He got that out for us. Gave us money to buy food. And now I'm doing good. I'm not drinking. You know, and this went on for about a month. About a month. I'm putting on new customers. Moon's happy. Shirley's happy. Everybody's happy. But Charlie's thirsty, you know. So I stopped for a beer. And the old rat race started again. The old rat race started again. Now the people are screaming because I'm drunk and I'm supposed to be on the west side of town. I'd be on the east side of town. I didn't know where the hell I was, you know. I had no customers in northeast Pennsylvania, which is 12 miles away from Erie. I had no customers out there. 10 o'clock at night, there I am with a milk truck, drunker than hell, peddling milk, giving the milk away in the bars. And I give all this milk away in the bars, and I run out of money, and I'd say, anybody going to buy me a beer? Get the hell out of here. I already give them 50 bucks worth of milk, for Christ's sakes, and they get out of here. And what a rat race that was. So I'm up at this bar. Same thing that happened to me 3 days and 10 o'clock at night for some reason or the other. And I'm at this bar, and I'm drunk, and I got the milk truck parked out behind the bar. And the bartender says, hey, Charlie, here comes Mama Bear. I used to call Shirley Mama Bear. He said, here comes Mama Bear. And at that time, I had a big pink and white DeSoto about as long as two of these tables together, you know, big jobby. And so I grab a couple six-packs, and out in the milk truck I go. Now we're on the east side of town, and I'm driving all over hell drinking a beer. Shirley's in hot pursuit with that DeSoto, man. She's coming, you know. And I'm throwing the beer cans out, having a hell of a good time, you know. That was fun, wasn't it, Shirley? Yeah. So a woman come up the wrong way of a one-way street and run right into the milk truck. Now I ain't got no front wheels, you know. So a typical egotistical alcoholic stand alongside the milk truck, drinking a beer, watching the crowd come. Oh, Jesus, I love them crowds, you know. And I said, somebody call the cops. This dumb broad, excuse me, ladies, run right into my milk truck. And here comes the police, you know. All right, Charlie, what happened? I said, that broad run into my milk truck. He says, yep, she's at fault. But we're going to arrest you for drunken driving. Now Shirley's back in the crowd, see? She wouldn't say, officer, that's my husband, I'll take care of him. She hid in the goddamn crowd as they took me away. You know what I mean? Oh, good Lord. So I went to my first AA meeting. It was a young people's group of Alcoholics Anonymous in Erie, PA. And it was down near our lower State Street where a lot of things were happening. And I went to that meeting. They set me right next to an active wino. And he kept breathing on me, you know. And I listened to this meeting. And I listened, and the chairman, I knew who it was today. I knew who the guy was that gave the lead. You know, that's many, many years ago. And I heard him say one thing when I went to that meeting. I heard him say one thing. If anything happens, if you should go out and get yourself tied up with booze again, always come back. You're always welcome to come back. There wasn't too many joints in Erie anymore. It wanted me back. Alcoholics Anonymous wanted me back. Can you believe that? So I listened to that lead. And I said, holy Jesus, this guy went around the world and the Queen Mary, he didn't know he went, for Christ's sake. I said, holy Christ, I mean, he needs something too. So after the meeting, they asked me if I'd like a cup of coffee. And I said, no, I got a very important meeting I have to go to. And that was the nearest spittoon I could find. That goddamn meeting made me nervous, you know. So for 10 years, I went back out. 10 years, I went back out. Drinking, trouble, drink, trouble, drink, trouble, drink, trouble. And man, I got in a hell of a lot of trouble. A lot of trouble. I spent a lot of nights in jail, just overnight, just because of drinking and fighting. Coming home, my eyes cut, my nose broke, and saying to Shirley, here I am. You know, Jesus, guys, that was terrible. It was terrible. But that's the way it was going. And I was going through jobs of bat out of hell, you know. And so I went out for 10 more years, and I come back to AA. I come back to AA after four times of being out there. I come back to AA, and I went up to this meeting on a Friday night, and Shirley had left me again. I don't know why, but she did. And when Shirley packed to leave me, she packed piggy banks. That's all. She didn't pack clothes enough. She just took all the banks because she knew Charlie might need a dime, you know. And when we moved 13 years ago into a new home, I'm down in the cellar, renting that damn cellar out, and here's these goddamn duffel bags. I was wondering what the hell's in there. I opened them duffel bags. They were filled with six-packs. Because every time I left the place, I'd always make sure I had a six-pack, regardless if I was going to drink it or not. Then I'd go hide it in these damn duffel bags. Then I got sobered up, and I forgot what the hell I hid in there, you know? So we left them there. For the people who bought our house, I'm sure the guy, if he was cleaning out the cellar, and if he wasn't in AA, he was having a hell of a good time, I'll tell you that. But so, you know, I went up to that meeting, And my attitude was, if anybody says anything smart to me about going back out and drinking, I'm going to punch him in the mouth, and that's the end of that. And I went to that meeting, my friends. Like I said, Shirley had left again, was with her parents. They were, she was going to file for a divorce. Is that right? See what I mean? She does that often now. She goes like that. But anyhow, I went to that meeting. And when I got there, they said, Charlie, we want to help you. We don't care if you're working. We don't care what race you are. We don't care what religion you are. We want to help you. We want to help you. And my friends, I cried all the way home. I cried all the way home. But somebody cared what the hell happened to Charlie. Somebody, these people really cared what had happened to me. So I come back to AA. That was in 1969. I come back to AA. And, you know, at first I was having a difficult time. Probably the first 4 or 5 years I was having a difficult time letting go of the life that I led before I come to AA. I was a runner. I wasn't much of a guy to drink at home unless somebody stopped in and said, Charlie, you got a beer, would drink everything. It was move, you know. I liked the barroom scene. I liked the bright lights and the way everything went on in bars. And so I was having a tough time surrendering totally to alcohol. But because of AA, because of God, because of the meetings, I kept attending these meetings. The next thing you know, I got sponsoring people and trying to help people. My sponsor, I said to my sponsor, I was sober about 9 months. And I said to my sponsor, well, when the hell am I going to get a chance to sponsor somebody? And he said, when God feels fit that he thinks you might be able to handle something, he'll give it to you. And man, he's given it to me. And I'm grateful that he gave it to me because it's helped me stay sober. I got my mind off of me. You know, I got my mind off of me. And I started thinking about other people. And then I get furious at some of these people. They know I'm a, well, if you promise you ain't going to throw, I'm a Cleveland Browns fan.
Yeah, you are.
Especially this year. So it would come, you know, my friends, I just can't help it. I have to go when I'm called. I have to go when I try never to say no. There may have been times that I had to say no, but I go. And at first, Shirley would look at me, we'd be planning a function or something, and somebody would call, and we'd cancel what we were doing, and I would go. And at first, I think it bothered Shirley. But the more AA meetings I took Shirley to with me, we went to AA meetings together, Shirley and I. We go to a lot of meetings, and we still go to AA meetings together. And she learned about Alcoholics Anonymous, and she was a member of Al-Anon, you know. But she learned by going to AA meetings with me, because we got to remember, people come to help us also, and we got to give this a way to keep it. And there's no bigger satisfaction in a person's life to be able to go and help somebody and watch them grow. You know, I got a suit on tonight, the pants and the coat match. You know what I mean? Jesus, drinking, holy Christ. It was just, it wasn't that way, I'll tell you. But all because of Alcoholics Anonymous. Our family, my nieces and my nephews and people, my sister. You know, my sister would get so furious with me. She's 4'11". You know, and I'm 6'1". People say, Betty, what happened to you? She said, oh, the phone rang. You know, but she'd get up on a stool to slap my face. And I'd just stand there, you know. Guys, I must have been a stupid fart, you know. I'd just stand there, and people would pound the hell out of me. I'd just stand there, you know. Of course, a few of them did a little more than that. But anyhow, this is what helped me stay sober, by trying to help other people. I'm very active in our Alcanon Club in Erie, Pennsylvania. It's the oldest club of that nature in the world. We're celebrating, I think, 45 or so many years, but it's the oldest club of that nature in the world, you know. And how many people have passed through those doors in Erie, Pennsylvania, through that club, you know? Now, a lot of people don't like being around a club. The atmosphere, they just don't care to be there, and you don't have to be there. For me, that's the kind of guy I was, and I'm very comfortable there, and I'm still sober, you know. So I'm not going to quit doing what I was doing that's helping me stay sober. You know, I'm just as close to a drink as anybody else, you know. But every morning I get up, I ask God to help me not to want to drink today. And I go about my day and try to do the best I can. Many days I have to stop. God, help me stay sober today. 2 or 3 times in a day, you know. But still, I've learned all of this in AA. I knew nothing when I come to AA. You know, and I've had people even think I was intelligent. Can you imagine that? And all I tell them is stuff I learned in AA, you know. People where I work, they say to me, how do you do that, Charlie? And what I'm doing, I got it all from AA. You know, sometimes I amaze myself. You know, sometimes I amaze myself. You know, I this is part of my territory down in this neck of the woods. I call in Copperwell. I'm a refractory salesman selling high-temperature fire bricks and things of that nature. And Sharon Steele used to be. And I spend a lot of time down here. I stay up at the Holiday Inn in Hermitage, PA. I'm usually there once a week or once every 2 weeks. Go to AA meetings. I've met a lot of nice people down here in AA. And I go to AA meetings in Greenville. I go to more AAs out of town, AA meetings out of town than I do in town because I need them. I need these meetings, you know. I go to these motels and I watch guys just kind of walking around, looking up at the sky, just walking around, trying to stay the hell out of the bar. They're trying to stay out of the bar. And I'll go to an AA meeting. I have something to do. I'll go to an AA meeting. And I come back, I'll peek in the bar. There he is. You know, he finally got there. I don't have to worry about that. I don't toy with my allergy. I'm an alcoholic. I cannot have one drop of alcohol. My sobriety is so important to me and my family. And like I mentioned to my nieces and my nephews, you know, before when I was drinking, any emergency whatsoever, Charlie would run. Let everybody else take care of it. Charlie will run. And I'd go out and get drunk and let them take care of it. Today, because of God, because of AA, they all come to me and say, Uncle Chuck, what can we do? What can we do? And I try to help them. I lost my mother last year. I lost my father a couple of years ago. But AA was there. God was there. Shirley was there. And I was able to get through all these things. And I could feel pretty proud when it was all over that I didn't have to run to a bar and get drunk and take care of things. Shirley would get sick. I'd run to bars and get drunk. Let somebody else take care of her. I don't do that stuff anymore. You know. And again, it's because of this fellowship. You know, now, this is just me talking, my friends. I don't want to offend anybody. But several of my friends, good friends, in AA, and I'm speaking of years of 18, 20, 21 years of sobriety, are fooling around with these old tools and these non-alcoholic beers. I think it's very dangerous myself. The only thing I would do for Charlie, I know there's a very small amount of alcohol in there, but it's enough to light the fire. And for me, all that would do would put me back in the bar rooms. And once I get back in the bar rooms, it wouldn't be long, and I'd be flying. There's no doubt in my mind. So I'm not going to toy with my allergy. I'm not telling anybody else. You can do what the hell you please, you know. But I'm telling you, that's pretty dangerous stuff. I've seen it happen to many guys before. I used to have a product that they used to call it near beer, you know. And they were drinking near beer. And somehow or the other, they got it mixed up with the real thing. And they're off and running again. You know, so for me, when a couple of my pigeons told me they had tried a couple of bottles of beer, I can't, damn, I can't believe that. But they did. You know, and one guy's wife went out and they were having spaghetti for supper. And she bought a six-pack of O'Toole's and brought it home. This guy's got 20 years next month. And he drank two of them. You know? Whew. Boy, oh boy, that makes me nervous. That makes me nervous. There's a lot of things going on in AA today. You know, us old farts, it's hard to get us to open our eyes to different things, you know. We're in the 90s, and there's a lot of different things happening. But the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous has not changed. The big book has not changed. It is Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and I know there's a lot of people with other problems other than alcohol. And they're welcome at our AA meetings, at our open meetings, you know. But it's not going that way any longer. You know, a guy will get up and jump up in the air and he'll say, I'm an addict. Well, shit, to me, that's a room over the third floor. I didn't know what the hell that was. You know what I mean? And... my friends. My friends, you know, and we're not putting down people who have other problems, and we know that. And I'll tell you the honest to God truth. You know, I didn't even know such a thing as, you know, and I was through the Korean conflict. I spent 13 months over in Korea, you know. And believe me, my friends, until I come to AA at age 37 years old, I had never seen or heard of marijuana. I mean, that's how goddamn naive I was. I mean, I couldn't picture myself sitting in the bar and going like that. Now, give me a keg of beer, I could see myself falling off a stool and having fun, you know. And, you know, believe me, if I would have tried that stuff, most likely I would have gotten, I would have run into a lot of trouble with it. But I never have. And, I try to help people who have that problem, drug problems. And but I put them on to people who understand them. And most of the people are quite a bit younger than me. Most everybody's quite a bit younger than me. But and to get them help, you know. And that's the way I think it should be. You know, that's the way I think it could be. You see, what worries me, doesn't worry me, what the hell, but, you know, if I'd bring a 100% alcoholic, brand new person into Alcoholics Anonymous, and the lead would get up there and speak 100% about drugs, I'm afraid that's not going to help that man. I'm afraid that he's not going to come back. You know what I'm saying? And so those things concern me. Now, I know not everybody agrees with me. But if you look in the dictionary, you'll find there is a difference. Now today, you know, every goddamn thing's bad for you, you know. Alcohol now is a drug. When I come to AA, alcohol is not a drug, you know. And in the dictionary, it says it's a spirit. And if you drink too damn much of the spirit, you get a little wacky in the head, you know. But if you have any questions about that, look in the dictionary on each one of these things. They'll tell you what it's about. It has a description in there, what it's about, you know. But my friends, I'm very happy to be here. Like I say, I'm just a drunk. I'm certainly nothing special. And I know that the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous is here to help everybody, and they will. Give yourself a break. You know, you're not giving AA a break. Give yourself a break and come to these meetings, no matter how many times you have trouble. I have a friend of mine right now, 15 years sobriety. He's been in and out of AA 20 times, at least. Now he has 15 years sobriety. So that's why we say, keep coming back. Keep coming back, you know. And if anybody makes any smart remarks to you because you had some trouble and had a drink, well, then they're not looking at their program very damn well. You know what I mean? We don't look down our nose at anybody that's had trouble. Look at myself. Look at the trouble I've had. Now it's over 25 years almost, you know, and that's the way it should be. We're going to try to help whenever we can, whenever, you know. And because of this Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, so many lives have come back together. You know, so many families have got back together. It's just an amazing thing. My father, you know, I was in AA many, many years. And I'd get down to visit my dad. He was all crippled up in a wheelchair, you know, and I was proud to be able to take him in a wheelchair, take him to Cedar Point, you know, and, you know, geez, it was knocking hell out of me, but, you know, I was doing it. And I was proud to do it. But I wouldn't have done it if it wouldn't have been for Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, now, you know, I'm sober like 15, 18 years, and I get down and say, "Hi, Dad, how you doing?" He says, "How come you entered a meeting?" I said, "Jesus Christ, I don't have to go to a meeting every day, you know." But they knew. They knew what Alcoholics Anonymous did for their son. Somebody would say, "Well, Charlie can't drink anymore." She'd, "Well, he could have one or two if he wanted to." You know, like it was her fault that I was an alcoholic. You know, I can't have one or two. I can't have a drop. If I want to maintain living and being as happy and being able to help other people, trying to work the 12 steps to the best of my ability, you know, and, you know, anybody, I don't know anybody who works the 12 steps perfect. You? The only ones I've seen working perfect are in pajamas. You know what I mean? We do the best we can. We do the best we can today, you know. Yesterday's history, tomorrow's a mystery. Let's just take care of today. Let's just not drink today, you know. And, you know, a higher power, love. I have no problem with that. I know a lot of people do when they come into AA. But as the years go by, and a lot of these people in here got a lot more sobriety than I have, and they see the change. They see the change, you know. How I used to be so, embarrassed and hide to talk to God. I didn't want my wife to see me to talk to God, you know. But keep coming. And my friends, I want to congratulate you on your 4th anniversary. And I've never seen a nicer group, you know. It's just great. You know, the thing is, you know, now I understand there's going to be a dance here tonight. Is that right? Yeah. Being sure you're old jitterbugging fools. I don't know about anymore, you know. Half you never heard what the hell jitterbug is, you know. But, you know, you get out there and you look and you watch these people dancing. A guy's actually dancing with his wife. Can you imagine that? Huh? And they're having a hell of a good time. And they're having... And you know, the other thing that will amaze you at a party this size, Sue, this is a big party. And everybody would probably go home with the same person they brought. Huh? Ain't that the truth? Ain't that the truth? And our poor spouses, honest to God, that's... Honest to God. You know, but it is. That's what it's all about. That's what it's all about. You know, I'm going to say one more thing. I'm going to shut down so we can enjoy the evening. Our club in Erie, every year we have an AA picnic. It's Alkanon Club, which is not AA. The Alkanon Club is not AA, but everybody in AA belongs to the Alkanon Club. And we have this picnic. And about 5 years ago or 10 years ago, whatever, you know, we have races and things for the youngsters, you know, and jumping out of bags and things for the youngsters, you know. And a guy walked over and he says, "Charlie," he said, "I don't know who those people are over there." And I looked, you know, and I said, "God damn, I never seen that guy either," you know. And down below, in another area, the Knights of Columbus was having a picnic. But this guy's kid was in our races, and his other little girl was eating the Rox Roast sandwiches. They were having a hell of a good time. And a guy walked up through there and he says, "Hey, Joe, what the hell are you doing here?" He says, "Ain't this the picnic?" He said, "No, we're way down there." He said, "What the hell, I'm staying here." He had a bottle in a brown bag. No, he was having a hell of a good time, you know. Did we people in AA get upset about that? Hell no. We just went and told him, "Please don't be drinking it here." But you know what I mean? That's what this is all about. The kids were having a great time. The parents were having a great time. Everybody was having... He was having so damn much fun he didn't go to the Knights of Columbus picnic. Now, can you imagine that? With that, my friends, I want to thank you for having me. Renee, thank you for calling me. Sue, you're a wonderful girl and doing a fine job. Thank you.